Hey, Brenda, and good morning to Brenda and everyone. Welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I'll be the host for our presentation this morning. Today is Sunday, October 19th, 2025. The share ID numbers for Friday, October 17th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 22,879. That's 22879. For the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting on Friday, that's 22,880, 22880. This morning, A Vision for You presents Recover to Live. One of the defining features of having this disease is that it's kind of like a fire hose of tiny humiliations blasting you constantly in the face, never allowing you to look away, even when we most want to look away. And, you know, by virtue of being human, pain, of course, is inevitable. The only question really is how much and how often. And what matters is what we do about it. This is where the greatest opportunity lies in recovery. See, most people avoid pain and the difficult emotions that go along with the experience that causes the pain. And we do this by, you know, suppressing these emotions, which over time usually leads to more suffering. Yet in the midst of inevitable human suffering, there's hope. There is hope. In fact, on page 93 in the AA 12 and 12, it says the following, and I'm quoted. It says, pain is the touchstone of all spiritual progress. The pains of drinking, in our case eating, had to come before sobriety, and emotional turmoil before serenity. So in this respect, pain is indeed the greatest motivator, as we learn, and it serves really as a catalyst for a revolutionary spiritual transformation. In the 12-step program of action, our text is full of very specific promises, and we find one of these promises quoted in the foreword to the AA 12 and 12. And it says, and again, I quote, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. And that's quite a bold promise. And, you know, the obsession to eat is eradicated and we become happily and usefully whole. It's no small miracle. And that gift comes by way of a relationship with a power infinitely greater than human power. The OA preamble says there is one who has all power. That power, that one is God. May you find him now. And, you know, I would offer to you that we're not here to judge our past experiences, but rather to maybe just to dance with them, to use them as God intended, to learn more about who we are, who God is, and how we can be of maximum service to others. And this, of course, is the beauty of the recovery process, and it's found in the application of the steps. So that, you know, we find that we can match calamity with serenity, and the joy that we'll hear about is in the dance with life. And so to talk more about that, joining us this morning to share her personal story of transformation as the result of the application of the 12 steps is Roz G. And Roz is a recovered compulsive overeater from California, and she's dedicated to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a way of life. So it's with much gratitude that we welcome her to the line this morning. Good morning, Roz.
Good morning, Larry. Here's the number one question that we hear on Vision for You is, may I be heard?
You could be heard perfectly. Thanks for your service.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Larry. And thank you, everybody. My name is Roz G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Palmdale, California, which is in the county of Los Angeles. And I want to say thank you to Leah for sending me a text message asking for me to share my experience, strength, and hope due to a cancellation. And I was on a trip on the other side of the earth. I was in Turkey last week, and this text came in. And I just thought, God, oh, you must want me to share something, because, you know, I've been waiting to be asked to do a lot of things in my life over the past year, and things that, you know, that are, you know, outside of program or inside of program, instead of, you know, seeking to be heard, it was more like, wait, God said to me, wait to be asked for situations, wait to be asked for leadership, wait to be asked to speak. And I was asked to speak. So I believe that God wanted me to speak today. So I've been in Overeaters Anonymous since January of 2002. And I have been in 12-step programs since I was 17, 18 years old. And I used to think it was kind of like an ego trip to say that, you know, I'm an old timer or I've got 40 years or whatever. But the truth is that I started 12-step programs when I was a teenager because of my mother's drinking. And I started going to meetings. I got rides to Alateen meetings, but I'll just say that once because this is OA. But I just want you all to know that I've been around a long time. And I have not really recognized that, but I'm an OG when it comes to 12-step. And I think it's important to share a little bit of my Overeaters Anonymous story so that you can identify, because when I hear speakers, I would like to identify with them. And that's what Bill W. did in the very first page. The first page of the AA book is Bill's story, page one. Yes, we have the forewords, the XX pages, the doctor's opinion, which we wouldn't have a program without that. But page one of the AA Big Book is Bill's story to identify with the problem. So I'm going to spend a few minutes identifying with you, and then I'm going to get into Recover to Live. And I'll say that, and I'll also say by way of introduction, is that there's a slogan in the AA Big Book that says live and let live. And I spent many of my early years in recovery practicing that because I was so busy worrying about what everybody else was doing or not doing that I was not living my own life. I was thinking about what you were doing or weren't doing, or the alcoholics in my life, or the people that weren't doing what I wanted them to do. And I learned to, what about the live? What about the live and let live? And so, you know, I attend a nightly meeting pretty much nightly where one of the leaders of the meeting talks about recover to live. Don't live to recover. Recover to live. Don't let overeating, don't let this disease steal any more of your life. And so I've been practicing recover to live for quite a while, and I'm going to talk about that more later in the talk. And hopefully it will be a lighthearted, inspiring talk today. But I need to identify. It's very important. So as I said before, I came into Overeaters Anonymous in January of 2002. It was a New Year's resolution, which I did every year. Every year, every January, I was going to lose those 50 pounds. It was on the list of resolutions. And I never had a plan. I didn't know how I was going to lose those 50 pounds. I was just going to do it. And my experience was going on diets and going to the library to get the next diet book, because part of my story is living in American-style poverty. I didn't as a child. I had a very rich childhood. My father was a professor at a local college, and we had everything we needed. But my disease took me into a marriage that was just poverty, you know, it had poverty written all over it. I didn't see those flags, and I got into it, and I was living on welfare, and I would like to say that as a teenager and as a person that before I got into that marriage, I had dreams. I wanted to be an actress. I wanted to be a comedian. Not a stand-up comedian, but like a Carol Burnett type. I'm talented with character acting. I can mimic a lot of people and characters. And I wanted to do that. And I could make people laugh. that dream was stolen from me when I got married and I was really into the diseases. So it's coming back, though, which I'll share a little bit later. But I wanted to, you know, that was one of my dreams, to be the next Carol Burnett, to have my own variety show and have and laugh all the time. But I'd say, okay, so the disease of compulsive eating was always with me. I know it because I can look back at my life and see that I was not eating normally like everybody else was, but because of being young and having a high metabolism, it masked itself, you know? So I remember we would have fish fries on Fridays. And in those days, in, you know, the early 60s, early 70s, a fish fry was not a, you know, an unhealthy meal. It was like, you know, just having a nice Friday Catholic kind of a fish fry where mom and dad would barbecue fish and make really good side stuff. And I wanted the canned Chef Boyardee meals. I always wanted the stuff in the can. I didn't want the healthy food that my parents were cooking. I remember when we had a pantry in Northridge, California, and my mom would buy cookies, and I wanted the cookies. I would open the cabinet, and my mom would say to me, "Wait till your dessert." And I would be fumingly angry because she wouldn't let me have a cookie when I wanted it. And I didn't know that at the time that my body was really wanting that stuff. But I just remember getting really ragefully angry at my mother for saying, "No, you can't have that cookie now." And then when I got into college and I had a lot of freedom, I would smoke cigarettes, and my friends and I would go to local fast food restaurants, and I would, you know, we usually, you know, go after class, and where I was a theater major, and I would just, we just eat whatever the heck we wanted, and I would put extras on all the foods, and it didn't affect me bodily. It affected me mentally. I knew what it was doing for me, but I didn't understand that until I came into Overeaters Anonymous many years later. The big book says, you know, we eat for the effect. And I was eating for that effect, but I didn't know it at the time. And I got into an alcoholic marriage. I got married because I didn't think that anybody else would love me the way my husband said he would love me. And I believed him. Well, no one's going to love you like I love you. And we need to get married so that I can give you a better life. Because my husband was from Mexico, and he wanted to get citizenship in the United States. And he used me as a person to do it. And I was young and impressionable. And I had, you know, God bless my dad, I had no guidance on how to marry someone, how to meet someone, how to date, what to look for. My teachers were the soap operas and Hollywood and romance books. That's what taught me. And he was exciting and brash and muscular and had an accent and was very gorgeously handsome and sang mariachi songs to me in the restaurant that we worked at, where I was a waitress and he was a cook. And I fell for that. And I, of course, married him secretly. He was a very good cook, and he would steal food from the restaurant and bring it home to our apartment. And we would eat at night, you know, after our shifts, with all the stuff that goes with Mexican food, all the sides, all the toppings. And I started to gain weight. Well, in that period of my life, I was in an improv comedy group. And the members of the comedy group saw what was happening to me. They saw me gaining weight, and they saw me being stolen from this man who was jealous of any success that I had. And they tried to warn me, you know, "You're gaining weight, Roz. Are you going to be available for this, you know, this comedy show?" Because we used to do comedy shows, improv shows on Sunset Boulevard on Tuesday nights at this place called the Laugh Factory. And he was very jealous of that. And eventually I left the group. So that's when my dreams really started to kind of fade. And I gave my life to that, to him. We got married, and I had children with him. I secretly married him. I didn't tell anybody in my family. I was too ashamed because everybody else had nice weddings, and I eloped so that I could get him a green card so that he could give me a better life. And it didn't turn out that way, but it brought me to these programs. It brought me to Al-Anon and eventually Overeaters Anonymous. So I'm really skipping over a lot of things because most of this talk is going to be about living. But we were on welfare, we were on food stamps, and food stamps really did give us a lot of food. And so I was living in an apartment, and in my town, the east side of town is kind of not, you know, not the really nice part of town. I mean, I'm sure all over the world, maybe the east is great, but in my, you know, my town, the Antelope Valley, the east is not. And I was sucked into a church where they told me to, you know, to submit to your husband and do what he tells you. And I just went down into living on welfare, food stamps, and overeating. All I had in my life was very small. I had my three kids, which I love my kids. They're adults now. They're all, you know, two of them are in their 30s. One of them's getting ready to turn 30. They all have such great lives. One of them still lives with me. She has a learning disability, and she's doing her best. She's wants to be a registered nurse, so she's a nurse now, but it's like a nursing assistant, and she's in like the community college taking a class at a time and saying, I passed my biology test, and yay, you know. But she's a wonderful roommate, and she's in the other program. And I took her to one of the Vision for You conventions, the last one we had in Newark. She was with me there. I love them. I wouldn't change any of my story, any of it, because I love my kids. And if I hadn't have been married to him and been on food stamps and been in overweight and miserable, I wouldn't have come to Overeaters Anonymous, because my best friend, who is in AA, I asked her, is there a program for people who have, you know, with eating, who are overweight? And she said, well, there's Overeaters Anonymous. So I went to Overeaters Anonymous in the Valley, here in the Valley. I'm a Valley girl. And I saw a bunch of people sitting in a circle, a bunch of women mostly, talking. And I was like, what's this? You know, so I left and I went back on diets. And I didn't come to OA until till life got really, really bad. And, you know, I learned that the big book does say that, you know, we have our lives have to be pretty much well smashed. Like, we have to go through the ringer. We have to go through, like Larry said in the introduction, pain is this touchstone to progress. I couldn't get the program until I had to get into enough pain. And the pain, like the springboard that brought me into the Overeaters Anonymous meeting was Christmas of 2001. Where I was at my mother's house, and we were all having Christmas, and my sister, youngest sister, said to me, it looks to me as if you could stand to lose a few pounds. And on Christmas Day, where my mother got my sister's colored sweaters and me a black sweater, I was pissed off about getting a black sweater, and jealous of my sister's, middle child syndrome, and I said to my sister, well, F, you know, and you don't say F, a Christmas dinner in my family. You know, you just don't do that. Some families do that. I learned through Ross. They do that all the time. But through Ross Godin's family, no. And the next morning found myself at the Whole Eatery, which is a mom and papa, you know, health food store here in my town, getting my flaxseed oil and my wheat germ concoction, which was nothing more but laxative abuse. This was on the day after Christmas, when people are usually in their homes. Maybe they're going to Christmas sales or they're enjoying their family. I was sitting in the cold parking lot of the Whole food store waiting to get a concoction to give myself laxative abuse to get out all the crap that I ate the day before, because I think I binged on chocolate chip cookies that night at Christmas, not remembering what even driving home. So that was what brought me into the meetings. So Actually, it was the week later, the New Year's resolution, where I thought, oh yeah, there's that Overeaters Anonymous. So I was on this dilapidated computer that had a modem where it was like, that's the way it looked. I'm just giving you a sound for how it looked. And it said, welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, welcome home, with that, I was so slow. And I looked into Lancaster, and there was a meeting on Avenue J in the Methodist Church. That was my very first meeting. And the man who does the sober eating workshop, who leads it, excuse me for my coughing, y'all. I just got back from this trip, and I'm still in a little bit of jet lag, and it's affecting me a little bit, physically. Anyway, so this guy who leads the sober eating workshop, which you'll probably see at the birthday party this year, which you will see, I'm sure. I've never not seen it. He was in that meeting. He and three other ladies. And I was complaining about the sweater that I got for Christmas, and that my sister told me I needed to lose weight. And these people were so kind, and they just looked at me and shook their heads, because I didn't know about crosstalk. There was no crosstalk, and they just shook their heads. And then after the meeting, they gave me the For Today book and said, keep coming back. And I kept coming back. So I went to OA. The big book sat on the table. It was a piece of literature. I got a sponsor. She told me, read two pages a day. And I didn't understand that, but I did. Abstain from sugar for at least a month, which I did. And of course, I picked it back up again after the month. But I never left OA. I can't, it will take the whole, time for this special edition for me to tell you my OA journey. But just to say that I wanted to tell you that's how I got into OA. And several years later, several relapses and years later, a woman came to the local meeting with a big book in her hand and said, and she was so serene. She had a very, a great shape, which, of course I was looking for how you look. And she said, this is the plan for recovery, this book. And this was in our meeting where we, just sat and talked about our lives every week. But she talked about the big book. She talked about this meeting on that you could talk on the phone. It wasn't Vision for You, but it was something that was close to it. So I went online because I couldn't get recovery. I couldn't lose the weight that I wanted to lose. And this person contacted me. She's still my friend today. I don't know if she comes to Vision for You meetings anymore, but she's still my friend, and she sponsored me. She said, do you need a sponsor? And I said, yeah. And she took me through the big book. And that was really what I never really read the big book and studied it line by line to see that this book is like a textbook, and it takes studying to really understand the plan for recovery. For a newcomer, not knowing Jack, still eating sugar, to just read two pages a day was not sufficient for me. I had to study to show myself approved. And so then one day, I think I was still eating, probably. She said, well, this guy, Harlan G, says this, this, and this, and this. She gave me the meeting for the Vision for You. And so I started getting in these meetings, and I heard, I was listening to the recordings, and I heard Harlan talking. And I remember seeing him at a birthday party years before talking about the big book. And he said, this isn't a program for people who want it. It's not a program for people who need it. It is a program for people who do it. He said that all those years ago. But I wasn't mature enough, and I wasn't in enough pain to really hear that message. But because of Vision for You's service ethic of taping people, of, recordings, I listened to a lot of the recordings, and I started to hear recovery. And so I got another sponsor who took me through the steps, and I have been abstinent for about 6 years now. And in July, Let's see. My abstinence date is, I'm going to, it is July 10th, 2019. So that's how long I've been abstinent. And I've been working this program ever since. So now I'm going to get into talking about living. And there's let's see. It says in the vision for you on page 151 in the big book, it says life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow about you. You will know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. And I believe that because I took the big book literally and I did exactly what it told me to do, and I do exactly what it tells me to do, my life has taken on new meaning. I still attend meetings almost daily. My life is so filled with wonderful, outside of program activities that sometimes I don't make the evening meeting, but I certainly listen to the Vision for You meetings every day. So, yes, I attend a meeting every day. I may not participate every day, but I'm here. And I sponsor. I will never get to a level of two of recovery where I don't have to sponsor anymore. Because I already tried that and that doesn't work. It doesn't work. So my program has to be number one in my life, and I have to be working with another compulsive overeater every day. And whether we talk on the phone or not, there's text messages, there's something that I have to do with this program every single day. So I've learned through step six and seven, I had problems with jealousy and envy and pride. Those were big stumbling blocks in my life. And, to say I'm a 62-year-old single lady, that man that I was married to that I talked to you about at the beginning of the talk, he died. We did get a divorce, but because he was addicted to pain medication, his kidneys failed him and he died. I did allow him to stay in my home about the last month of his life to so that the kids could, at least help him out. And they took him to his dialysis appointments. But because I wasn't going to allow him to overtake my home, he left angry and called me hipócrita, dueña. That was the last thing he said about me. In Spanish, that means a hypocrite owner, because I wouldn't allow him to cook in the kitchen. But my program had taught me, don't allow people to walk all over you. And I had to do step work over that because he was sick. And people had told me that was sick, a sick person. But the truth was that, when we were in one of the bedrooms that I let him stay in, he said, I want to tell you, I'm sorry for everything. I'm sorry for everything. And you've been a good mother. Because I have been a single mother for many years. And for those ladies that, if there's any single ladies out there who are raising their kids, my hat is off to you. Because it is a very big job to be a parent, to be a mother and a father, and to not compulsively overeat and do that is really difficult. Because loneliness comes in, jealousy of watching other people who are in relationships come in. And it overtook me. My sister has a wonderful marriage. I was jealous of her. Anybody that had a nice relationship, I was jealous of. And I avoided them. And I got on this thing where, I'm just going to do things myself, but that didn't work either. And so I got into another program to help me deal with that. And that's not OA. So if you want to talk to me about that, you can call me and I'll be happy to tell you about it because it has been a miracle for me. I am no longer a jealous woman. I have a relationship with my sister who is in a wonderful marriage today. And her husband, Bobby, is a musician and he does some side acting work. And he told me about central casting. And I got into central casting. And I have begun to do extra, like background work. And it's not anything that is like being the star of the show because, the ego wants to be the star. wants all the attention. But God is like, you know how in Superman, not Superman, Spider-Man. Spider-Man's uncle said to Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. And in another scripture, it says something like, he who is faithful in little will also be faithful in much. And so I always wanted to be the star. I wanted the attention. And I got this little central casting thing. Now, what I also need to tell you that, you know, I went to school. I'm a teacher. I have lots of college degrees. I have a career. And that's my bread and butter. But life really begins with the joy of what I really wanted to do. And so because my sponsor in this other program and I worked on my jealousy and my envy, and I got back into a graces with my sister and her husband. And because my sister is a very sincere lady, she loves me and she wants me to be happy. And so I actually am observing their marriage and how they, this is her second marriage. Because she had, you know, was grown up with me too. And none of us had our dad to tell us how to look for a guy. And she had a hard marriage too, her first one. God has given her a wonderful husband. And he's the one who told me about central casting. So now, you know, I have this side thing where I get to work on movie sets and commercial sets, and I am not the star. I'm in the background. But you know what? It's funny because he laughs and he'll go, "Here's your red carpet." You know, you're the star when I'm just this like background person who's like a blur. But you know what? I get paid. I get a paycheck. You know, and recently I got. I auditioned for a play in my town, and it's the Christmas Carol, the musical. And I just showed up. I just said, you know what? I don't care what part I get. I'm not in the jealousy, envy, I need all the attention star attitude anymore. If I get to sweep the floor, if I get a part in the back where I just am singing in the background, fine. And you know what? I auditioned for the show, and I got the Ghost of Christmas Future. And the Ghost of Christmas Future also plays the blind old hag. So I'm playing the blind old hag and the Ghost of Christmas Future. And you know how Carlin always says, is it odd or is it God? When I was in high school, I played the Ghost of Christmas Past in the high school play of A Christmas Carol. And now I'm 62 years old and I'm playing the Ghost of Christmas Future and the blind old hag. And yesterday, we had our first rehearsal, and or no, there was a lot of rehearsals, but I had my first rehearsal where I was, my part came up, and I had to sing this solo, and I'm telling you, I sounded so terrible. But the fear, I don't have like fear of what people think of me anymore. I had just got back from this trip. And my voice is messed up. And so the director's going to work with me tonight. I was afraid he was going to fire me. First of all, I have fears just like you guys do. And I deal with my fears every day in my 10 steps. And I remember writing, I told this the cast, I'm already going to Greece and Turkey. Part of my living is like these trips that I take. So I'm going all, I'm kind of like my talk is kind of like going all over the place. So I want to go back to a spot of living and recover to live. So I'll get back to the play later. So the big book says in the family afterwards, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. We try not to indulge in the cynicism over the state of the nations, nor do we carry the world's troubles on our shoulders. So, over the years, I have traveled to many places. I've been to Mexico. I've seen the ancient ruins in Mexico. I've been to Israel, you know, with all the biblical stuff. And just last week, I went to Turkey and Greece to see some more biblical sites and, you know, stuff that you see, you know, that concern my religion. And, you know, most of the people, I went by myself. Of course, I had people that belonged to my church, and I had a roommate that I know very well. So it really wasn't by myself, but I mean, I didn't go as a, Don't let your singlehood stop you from living your life. Or whatever your thing is in your life that you think, oh, I'm going to wait till I'm thin to do this, or oh, I'm going to wait till I'm married to do this. Bullshit. Go out and live your life. I want to tell you that. So I don't care. I saved up. I went on the trip, and most of the people on this tour group from my church are not in my political realm. But you know what? I had to do a couple of 10 steps to deal with that and to express lovingly my opinion. And with that, nobody talked about politics the whole rest of the trip. I do not indulge in the cynicism of the state of the nations. I have political opinions, but they don't, they don't run my life. I couldn't enjoy life if I did that. So, anyway, so life takes on new meaning for me, and I have gotten involved in lots of things outside of program. I started doing salsa dancing, and that was so much fun. I was one of the oldest people at the studio, because the studio that I joined was mostly 30-year-olds, but I could keep up with them. And I got a crush on a 30-year-old guy, and that was a thing I needed to work out with a sponsor. And she said to me, "Roz, when was the last time you were in a relationship?" And it was when I was 40-something years old. And she said, "You're still that 40-year-old woman. Give yourself a break. Don't beat up on yourself. It's okay." I wasn't in a relationship with that kid, but I had a crush on him. But I learned that. Oops. I'm 62 now. I need to be in age-appropriate relationships. So I let that go. I worked out those feelings, and I am on a dating, site and looking for men that are in my age group, so that I don't get into another messed up relationship. But anyway, but just to say, was I got back into dancing, and the dance studio owner asked me if I would audition for this show, which was kind of a little bit on the risque side. And since I'm a public school teacher, I had to look into my morals, because the big book says, ask God to mold and shape your ideals and live up to them. And so being in that play was a little bit risque. And so I had to say no to her. But then the Christmas Carol one came up, and I thought, I'm going to audition for that. And I got a part, and it's way more family friendly. So I'm doing that one. And it's not a big part, but that's okay. And the truth is, having a big part in a show calls, you have to sit and learn lines and spend a lot of time memorizing. And that's a big hassle. It really is. So having the comic relief and a little part in the show is really a joy, So what else do I want to say? I have two dogs. They're Labradors, Daisy and Louie. They're my Alla dogs. They've been to all my meetings pretty much, because I do a lot of Zoom meetings. And when the Serenity Prayer is said, their ears go up and they know it's time for a walk, or it's time for my attention, So I'm a big dog lover, and we go to the park every day. I have dog park friends. And because of my dog park friends, one of them took my dogs while I was on the trip last couple of weeks. And he fed them too much, but, what can I say? He took them, and they went to the park every day, and they're a joy. They show me unconditional love more than anything or anybody has ever shown me. And I sing in my choir at church. I love that. I serve at the welcome desk there. I greet people. I smile, and my mom is still alive. She's 86 years old. I spend time with her. I give her, I try to be of service to my mother. I always wanted to be. I need to take a sip of my tea. Hang on. I always wanted to be the star, and because today I don't need to have that attention. Spending time with my mom is more important than, going dancing on Friday nights. I used to, going dancing was great, but as I'm watching my mother age, and now that I'm in the show, I can switch things around. And so I go spend time with my mother on Friday nights, and it's such a joy to be with her. I visited my father in Indiana over the summer. And, you know, the more I mature as a 12-step, like I love what Larry said, and it's said every time, this person is a person that is dedicated to the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. And because of my 12-step dedication, I don't hold a grudge on my dad, but I do see what my dad did when I was a teenager. My dad left my mother and me and my sisters to get married to another woman and leave the state. And he left us. It was a huge abandonment for me, which I did not recognize until I did a lot of step work. But if I hold a grudge on my dad, I will not recover. I will not recover. And I don't like going there and seeing some of the things I see, but I do 10 steps and I make phone calls and I be the best daughter that I can be. And so my dad's in a program. He doesn't work it the way I would, but at least he has some kind of a program. So I'm grateful for that. And I go and visit him. My sister, I have a sister who lives in Louisiana. She's an amazing historian. She's written a wonderful book where she gets a lot of tours and does speaking engagements. And she's made me way more proud of my heritage than ever because of the books that she writes, or the book that she's written, and the speeches that she gives about our heritage. I'm a proud Creole woman, and I'm able to love my sister how she is. I'm able to love my dad how he is. I'm able to look at my sister's happy marriage and want something like that and not be jealous of her, but to be with her. On this trip that I took to Greece and Turkey last week, there were a lot of couples that were, you know, married like 40 and 50 years. I got to sit with them and observe their marriages. And, you know, they're not perfect. They're not perfect. Some of them have little arguments, or this one husband said to the wife, "I'm not sharing this food with you." And I just like, well, whoa, you know. Oh, let me talk about the food on the trip. There's a lot of food. But I'm telling you, there's something in this book that says, I'm going to paraphrase because I'm probably running out of time, but I'm going to just say that it's something that the big book says, it just works. It really does. It happens. It really does. It's like, it's a neutrality thing. It's being neutral. It's like, I cannot explain to you that every day there was a buffet twice a day. Because when you do these tour things, you know, you usually have buffets in the hotels, you know, in the morning and the evening. And you go out to lunch with the tour guide's best friends. And there was so much food. But I can tell you that I'm not interested in overeating. I don't want what overeating did to me. I don't want the pain. I don't want the mental pain. I don't want the physical pain, the emotional pain. I don't want to lose my sponsees. I don't want to lose my sponsors. I don't want to lose this. So in the Mediterranean, they eat very healthy there. There's not as much junk food there. Yeah, there's junk food, but you know what? There's lots of choices of fruits and vegetables to eat there. And I just didn't want to overeat. I ate what I was supposed to eat and went on with the touring and took a lot of pictures. I went to ancient landmarks, ancient, you know, what do they call the wonders of the world? There's ancient wonders of the world where I took selfies. You know, taking selfies can be an ego thing, but I wanted to say, Roz, you are here, because when I was raising my children in poverty, I was watching everybody else take vacations while I was sitting, going to the library, borrowing videos because I couldn't afford to take my kids places. Finally, when I got a part-time job and I was going that welfare to work program, I did get a little paycheck and I would take my kids to the movies every week. We started doing things. But I had to take these selfies to say, Roz, look where God has brought you. God has brought you to all these different places, God has got you back into the entertainment field, but in a very, very humble and modest way in the background where I'm not looking to be the star. God gave, I used to always want to have leadership at work. Why? I don't know. For the attention. Because I wanted the reputation. I didn't really want to do the work. But I got a call from the vice principal the other day saying, are you interested in taking these students on? It's like supplemental work. It'll give me extra money because I need the extra money to pay some taxes. I owe taxes from last year. I'm in a money program, but I'm not in debt. I just need to pay these taxes. So that job, I mean, that extra income will help me pay those taxes. I got asked to be the department chair. I got voted in. I didn't even ask to do it. Today or last week, I got asked to speak at this meeting. I wasn't looking for this. So as long as I'm doing God's business, God will, you know, say, okay, Roz, I think you're ready to do this, because I'm not coming to you this morning with a big head. I'm coming to you bragging on God by saying that God has given me such a beautiful life, a life of going back into, you know, acting, which I really love to do in a very humble and modest way, of dancing, of laughing, of joy. And I couldn't ask for a better life. Now, after spending time with those married couples and being in those long marriages, it's like, okay, if God wants me to be in another marriage, I'm sure that He will place me in one. But I am not stopping my life, and I'm not doing things because I'm not with somebody. I'm enough. I can go and have a really good time. And when I was in church last night, I saw, you know, some of the people that I was on the trip with, and they were like, hi, Roz, giving me hugs. How are you doing? Are you getting through the jet lag? How's everything going? You know, they don't look at me because I'm not, they're not looking to see, are you overweight, Roz? Are you in a relationship, Roz? No, they're looking at me because they love me, because I am who I am. I have a sense of humor. The program has taught me not to be phony. The program has taught me to be me, to be truthful, and to tell it like it is. You know, mean what you say, say what you mean, but don't say it mean. The program has taught me all of these skills. So I just want to say that I was looking at a third edition big book last night, and there was this a story from a Native American man who said, what did he say? Just join the program. Just get in. Just come in, and you're going to watch your life, you know, revolutionize. So I just want to say, God, thank you for the life that you have given me. I trust you, God, to bring a romantic interest in my life in your time. And if you don't, it's okay, because I'm living the high life. I'm not a rich woman at all. I don't have a big savings account. I have retirement from the, you know, California Teachers Association, but I can't touch that until I retire. And so I don't have a lot of money. But because of the money program I'm in, I'm responsible adult with what I have, and I save up for things that I can do, and I pay cash for them. And I have a great life. I don't need to have a lot of money. All I need to have is a personality. I need God's guidance and to depend on Him. And when I get resentful, you know, continue to watch for selfishness, self-centeredness, resentment, and fear. When these things crop up, yes, they do every day. I get to talk about it with somebody else. I get to use the step work and talk about my resentments or talk about my fears. Like, I thought I was going to get kicked out of the play because I was on this vacation. And I missed 2 weeks of rehearsals. But the director said to me yesterday, welcome back. I would like to work with you, so, you know, to get the music down and to get your character down. And then sent me an email of his and his wife's address so that I could meet with them tonight. I didn't get kicked out of the play. I got welcomed back into the play. I got welcomed back to the Welcome Center at church last night. My kids were so happy to see me. My dogs wagged their tails. I'm going to meet with my sponsee tomorrow morning. She said, welcome back. It's like, I don't know why I have this little thing inside of me that thinks that I'm going to get fired or I'm going to get, or people are going to reject me. I think that probably stems from my father's leaving me when I was 19 years old. But you know what? I'm never going to rise to be the level, I'm never going to rise above the level of a human being. So yeah, some abandonment issues are going to come in, you know, come and I'm going to feel like, oops, I'm going to get fired or something, or I'm not going to get this. You know, that's such BS. God has got me so tightly held. And as long as I keep doing this work, I will have a wonderful life. So I'll end this talk by saying, let's see, a couple of things. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the past. But why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered, and we have been given the power to help others. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thanks, Roz. Thank you so much for just a very powerfully authentic, heartfelt presentation. It was a real joy to hear you. And I think Daisy and Louie, they're smiling. I hope they're smiling here. So let me first, a couple of things before we go to the Q&A. Let me give you the share ID for the presentation this morning from Roz G. That number is 22,881. That's 22881. And also, if you want Roz's contact information, we're going to ask for that at the end of the recorded portion this morning. So please stick around for that. So at this point, if you have a question rolling around in your mind for Roz, now's the opportunity to ask that. And what I would ask from you is press star one to unmute your phone and give me your first name and last initial. Who has a question for Roz this morning?
Elaine S., New York.
Elaine?
Anayeta.
Anayeta?
Lisa Joby.
Lisa Joby? Who else has a question for Roz? Star one.
Marjo, Massachusetts.
Got you, Marge.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Here's who I heard. I heard Elaine, Hanayeta, Lisa, Joe, and Marge. Somebody else? Okay. Sounded like someone was trying to get in, but we'll catch you in the around the bend here. So let's go with this list. We have Elaine S. followed by Hanayeta. Good morning, Elaine. What question do you have for Roz?
Good morning. This is Elaine S., recovered in New York, formerly California. And first, I just want to thank you, Roz. I didn't hear the very beginning, but I heard your voice and I knew it was you. And I want to say, I'll ask my question, but I just want to say, it's not only for single people to live their lives, but it's also for married people whose husbands or wives don't want to travel, don't want to do certain things. We can live our lives. And my question to you is, can you tell us how you do your 10 steps? I find 10 steps have saved my life. I've done them in different ways, and I'm wondering how you do your 10 steps.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I agree. It's not just for singles, it's for marrieds. I agree with you. But as a single person, that's how I need to present myself. But yes. So I do my 10 steps in two different ways. The first one is if I am not in a private place, like I'm teaching and one of my students pisses me off or something, I will take out my phone and I will use the app that we've been given as a gift and I send it to somebody. If I'm not in a private place. And then later I'll follow up with a phone call. And I just do what the big book says. I say I'm resentful because of blankety blankety blank. And then I do what the big book says. And I realize this person is sick just like me. Please help me to show them patience tolerance, pity, you know, love. Love and tolerance is our code. And I pray. And you know, there's something magical in the prayer. Because when I start praying for myself and the person, you know, that resentment just fades away. And then I turn to someone I can help, whether it's in the program or not. So it's either with a phone call or using a text message, which the big book doesn't say anything about a text message, but hey, sometimes it helps. So that's how I do my 10 steps immediately.
Thanks so much for the question, Elaine. Okay, next up is Hanayeta, followed by Lisa Joel. Hanayeta, good morning.
Good morning, Larry K. from Illinois, Chicago. Hi, Roz, thank you so much for your amazing share this morning. You said something about waiting, how did you say it? To wait to be asked, and those weren't your exact words, but to, you know, not to to keep asking, but to wait until you're asked. And my question is, how in the world do you do that? And there's also one quick one, and that is, you said at the very beginning that you were an OG. I wanted to know what's OG.
Okay. All right. Those are funny questions. I love them. The weight and then the OG. So a couple of years ago, I wanted to have all these leadership positions at work. I wanted them for the money and for the reputation, not for the work. Because being a leader makes you, you have to work hard for that if you want to be any, you know, worth your salt. So, and God would never let me be a leader. I'd always get rejected. Because God knew. So I got rejected for all these different leadership positions. And I was, and during a fourth step inventory, I was angry that I didn't get picked for this and this. And my sponsor helped me to see that I wasn't angry at the people who got picked. I was angry at the hiring panel. And the hiring panel probably saw right through me. Because I was just really wanting the notoriety, not the work that comes with being a leader. So after my sponsor had me to meditate on what it takes to be a leader, and God said to me, wait to be asked. Because when someone asks you to do something, that means that they see something in you that they think you can do. And that means that I'm not searching notoriety, that I am simply doing what God is having me do by going to my classroom every day and teaching my students. And when I do that with joy, and I do it with responsibility, then someone comes along and says to me, would you be our department chair? That didn't come from me. That came from God. So how do you do it? For me, it was just, you know, the pain of rejection. I always learn through pain. But after a while, it was through meditation and waiting for God to speak to me by saying, Roz, these are the things I would like for you to do. Just wait for me to ask you, wait to be asked to do these things. That's the door of me opening it up to you. And then OG is a teenage way of saying original gangster. It's loving. It's not anything bad. It's a sign of respect on the streets. She's the OG. That means she's a long time. She knows what she's saying. Pay attention to her. And I'm not just saying it's me, Roz, but anybody that's like, I would consider Harlan an OG, you know. Okay. It's just, you know, you're just original, veteran. I hope that answers your question.
Thanks. Thanks, honey. Yeah, original gal. That's
original gal.
There we go. I'm going with gal, right? Authentic person's been around more than a minute. Thanks, Roz. And thanks, Hannah. Yes. Uh-huh. Okay, let's move on to Lisa Jo B. Good morning, Lisa Jo.
Good morning. So great to get to know you through your share, Roz. I love the Laugh Factory in Hollywood. It's so amazing how you seem to be like going through the phone, and I could tell you really love life to the fullest. You have what I want. I'm now in early recovery from an unfortunate relapse. What advice would you have for someone like me to strike a balance with all the early step work and sponsor requirements with socializing and following my passions, or should the latter be put on hold for a while?
Well, make sure your recovery is first. You know, get through the steps and get a sponsee and make sure that you're sponsoring someone. And then test the waters. What do you love? Ask yourself, what do you love? You don't have to answer that now, but sit in meditation and ask God. Or reconnect with who you were before you before the food and the food fog took over. And I'm sure that there were things in your life that you really loved, and maybe try reconnecting with one of those things, not all of them, just one. But your recovery needs to be in place first. First. That's my advice.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Lisa Jo. Hey, Roz, do you take questions from people from the Boston area?
No.
Okay, then Marge,
of course
you
I
can.
Do.
Hey, Marge. Good morning. Your turn.
Good morning. Thank you, Roz. That was delightful, delicious, and so on. It was just wonderful. I am Marjo from Massachusetts. My one question is, sounds like you're in a few programs yourself. How do you manage sponsorship? Because it feels like I'm not supposed to say no. I'm a girl that just can't say no. And yet I will get so heavily involved in the other two programs that it becomes difficult to sponsor in our OA program. And yet I know that that is key. Do you have any hints for me?
Yes. Don't overdo things. Even if it means having one sponsee in each program. You know, because there's plenty of sponsors. Could you mute your phone because it's a little noisy? But I mean that with love. I love your question. But I would just say, you know, maybe it would mean one sponsee per program. Because, there's a lot of sponsors available, and allow them to have the privilege of sponsoring someone else while you're sponsoring someone in that other program. Because how they say our credits don't transfer. But there's some rules that apply through each program, and that in order to recover, we must help others. And so I think that's just kind of like a law almost. So I do sponsor in all of my programs, but I have to take my time and do one at a time. I used to sponsor two or three people at a time, but as I age and as life, you know, changes with my mother getting older, I kind of do one person at a time. Now, I have sponsees that went through the steps, and they contact me through their 10 steps, through their nightly reviews. That's how, you know, I work with them. But as I'm always taking someone through. And if I'm not, I feel like I'm in trouble. So just start off with at least one person.
Thanks, Marge. Okay, we got plenty of time. If you have a question for a original gal, for Roz, for an OG this morning, please give me your first name and last initial. Who's got a question for Roz?
Sue L.
Sue L? Who else?
Aaliyah A.
Was it Aaliyah? Did I get that right?
Aaliyah. Yeah, Aaliyah A.
Aaliyah. Okay, Aaliyah A. Anybody else?
Sally A.
Okay,
hi,
Sally. Was it Maya?
Paya.
Paya, that's
yeah.
what I thought.
Paya Pink.
Penny C.
Yeah.
Paya and Penny. Anybody else? Last call. Okay, here's who I heard. I heard Sue, Aaliyah, Sally, Kaya, and Penny. I think that's a good list. That should probably get us to the top of the hour here. So let's start with a question from Sue, followed by Aaliyah. Good morning, Sue. Sue, press star one.
Sorry about that. Thank
that's
you,
okay.
Larry. Rose, I love your energy. It just comes across the line every time, whether you're moderating or speaking. Thank you for that. My question is, what does your meditation life look like? You've touched on it a couple of times, but could you expound on that, like on a daily basis? Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Thank you for your question. And meditation is sitting quietly. Sometimes I'll pull up a YouTube video, and there are wonderful AA meditations on YouTube that are like that go through the big book, like, you know, maybe On Awakening or Before We Retire at Night. There's some nice ones. And then sometimes I just sit in silence and I listen for God. Sometimes I have a couple of apps on my phone that have little, you know, Tibetan bell ringers. And there's something about a Tibetan bell that kind of brings you inward. And those are very special. I learned about those from a big book teacher. And so I have a couple of those. And then I have some of those that are mimicked on my phone. So if I need to change a behavior, I breathe in the virtue and I breathe out the defect or how the defect manifests, the selfishness. So for instance, envy and jealousy were a very big one for me. So I breathe them out and I breathe in gratitude and happiness for others. And I breathe it in and I breathe it out. And I ask God for the power to manifest those behaviors. And I'm telling you, over time, it really works. So quiet. There's so many different ways to meditate. You have to be what your favorite is. Otherwise, you won't do it.
Thanks, Sue. Okay, next up is Aaliyah, followed by Sally. Aaliyah, good morning.
Yes, thank you so much for this share. It was amazing. And thank you, Larry, for your service. So I could relate with what you said about the joy and of traveling. The thing with me is I feel as an addict, I always want more out of life. And I want more of these joys, you know, it's like I'm addicted to it. But, and also these things are self-care for me, of course, and joy and bring me joy. But do you ever have this feeling that, you know, I have this feeling sometimes that I'm not content and I need more, but the dilemma is, you know, that it's also self-care. Do you have experience, strength, and hope about balancing these two? Like, when is it that I want too much, and when is it that this is really self-care and I need it? Like, sometimes I get confused about that. I don't know if that made sense.
Yes. In the 12 and 12, in the AA 12 and 12, in step 7, it says that the AA's belief was that I can read it. To satisfy our basic natural desires is the main object of life. And I can say that, but we are sure that no class of people in the world ever made a worse mess of trying to live by this formula than alcoholics. For thousands of years, we have been demanding more of our share of security, prestige, and romance. When we seemed to be succeeding, we drank to dream still greater dreams. When we were frustrated, even in part, we drank for oblivion. Never was there enough of what we wanted. So that tells me the disease of more, and that nothing's never, ever, ever going to be enough. So the way that I have recently learned about enough is that, you know, being an extra on a movie set and not having the star part is enough. It doesn't mean I have to be the star. It doesn't mean I have to be the lead. It doesn't mean I have to be the recognized one. It means that I am a humble part of the bozo on the bus kind of scenario, where I'm just another human being. I'm in the schemes. I'm a part of the scene, and that I'm getting paid for it, and that's enough. I don't need more. That takes maturity and work. And the more I want more, the more exhausted I get. And at this point in my life, I don't want to be more exhausted. I want to feel well rested and serene. And, you know, even listening to stories of some of these people who have made it to the top and have so much money, they're not happy. They're not. Think of some of the stars that have had tragic outcomes. They've died through overdoses. They've gotten hooked on all kinds of drugs and alcohol because their lives are just swallowed up by constant activity and movement and touring, and there's no base. So I would have to say the disease of more is just exhausting, tiring, and I don't want it anymore. I just want what God would have me to be. And I'll say one more thing, and then I'll stop this answer. But this says here that character building and spiritual values have to come first. Material satisfactions are not the purpose of living. That comes from step 7 in the 12 and 12. And I pass on that answer.
Thanks, Aaliyah. Okay, next up, it's your turn, Sally. Good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks so much for being on for us this morning and moderating. Roz, that was so awesome. I'm just telling you, you're one of my favorite special editions yet. I just loved it. I love that you speak from the heart and that you are not sitting there reading. It's inspirational to me to just let God use you in the way that he did this morning. It was just wonderful. And I don't care if it was all over the map. You were, for me, you were a straight line, and that you were taking some little tiny offshoots and came right back to the center line. And I think that's what really was, for me, just it's part of your personality, creative as a speaker and just a wonderful speaker. Thank you so much for taking your time this morning and being here for us. Okay, here's my question. I first had to just tell you, I really love you. I hope I get to meet you at the convention. My question is how you sponsor, because I do also know that if I want to be recovered and I want to stay in the land of recovered and not end up on a boat back to a crazy, crazy place, I know I have to sponsor. And, you know, in the past, I've been just really imbalanced about sponsoring. And this time around, coming back to the program, I wanted desperately to be balanced, and you know, boundaries and balance are not easy for me. They're I'm Italian. I can blame it on my genes. I can blame it on being a New Yorker and whatever. I can blame it on a lot of things. My question is, how do you keep your kids in the balance with your sponsoring? Because you have a really busy life.
Well, my daughter is 33. My other daughter's 30, and my son is 27 or 28, I should know his age. So they're adults now, and they have watched me live the 12-step life. Like I said, I've been in since I was a teenager. And so they, I have a great relationship with my kids. I just went out to dinner with my two daughters on Friday night. We do things together. We go to Disneyland. We have annual passes, so we go to Disneyland together. We do FaceTime together. They come to me for motherly advice. Because I have a happy, joyous, and free life, I am an attraction and not a promotion. And so they love their mom, and they're proud of me. So I would have to say it's because I have unconditional love for my kids. Right now, my son is engaged to this girl, this lady he's only known. He hasn't known that long, and I really don't approve of it, but I'm not saying anything. I'm leaving it up to God, and God will work it out because he was engaged before, and it didn't work out, you know? But I'm not saying that in a mean way. I'm just saying that I have learned through, you know, trying to mind other people's business over the years that that doesn't work. So I use the principles of the program to raise, I used the principle of the program to raise my kids and the principles of the program to be an adult, to be a mother to adult children. And I can tell you this with my hand on the book, the big book, by saying I have a great relationship with all three of them. And I'm so glad that I was in that alcoholic marriage because I had three great kids. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Sally. Okay, we have Haya followed by, and we'll wrap it up with Penny. Haya, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Hi, everybody. This is Haya P. I'm very grateful. Roz, thank you so, so, so much. It was really magnificent. I hung on every word. My question was actually asked already. I wanted to hear about your meditation practice, your step 11. It was really, really beautiful to hear what you do, and I'm going to implement some of the things that you said, and I'll pass on that. No question, because it was already answered.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. I wanted to say, Larry, that somebody sent me a text message saying, Roz, you forgot to talk about your gardening. So I'm just going to say, take 30 seconds of saying, I also have a Master Gardener certificate. I grow all kinds of vegetables. I post videos about them on social media. And that's another part of the joy of living is gardening. Okay, stop. Go ahead, Larry.
Thanks, Roz. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, my gosh. So the last question is from, well, she likes collegiate basketball, women's, like I do, women's collegiate basketball. So hopefully you'll take a question from Penny C. Good morning, Penny.
Okay.
And baseball and football too, Larry.
Yeah, that's true. Good morning.
Good morning. And good morning, Roz. Good morning, Roz.
Good morning, Penny.
I'm just so surprised at how much I identify with so many parts of your story. But I'll make my question quick. I was asked one time to list my spiritual practices. Are you able to do that quickly?
My spiritual practices? Yes,
well,
making
I was
my
told
bed.
That writing down my spiritual practices and checking in with them is as important, if not more important, than writing down my food.
Oh, okay. Well, my spiritual practices are first thing in the morning is to wake up and do on awakening. And I write out on awakening every day. On awakening. Now I'm blank. On awakening. I think of the 24 hours ahead. I consider my plans for the day. I ask God to direct my thinking, that it would be divorced from self-pity. I ask God to help me pause when agitated. And so that is my first spiritual practice is on awakening. And then I do some of my own personal religious practices through devotionals and scripture reading. I make my bed. I think making one's bed is a spiritual practice. So my bed is made every day. Throughout the day, I pause when I'm agitated and I do a 10th step. And at night, every night, I do a nightly review where I send it to three or four people. And the nightly review concerns of, considers these nine, I think it's 9 to 12 questions, And meditation is a spiritual practice, which I just described to another lady in the question, earlier. I have a religious practice. I'd have to say making gratitude lists, I do that twice a day. So that is a spiritual practice. So after doing that, after accumulating those practices over years and years, it changes your whole life. It changes your whole outlook and attitude because there's so many things to be grateful for. There are people in this world that are living on the streets that are begging for something to eat. And I am not in that position today. So I have a lot of things to be grateful for. I hope that answers your question, Penny.
Yeah, thank you, Penny. Well, I guess we have time. Does anybody else have a question for Roz? Now's a great opportunity. Press star one.
Yeah, this is Larry.
Could I do a follow-up?
Oh. I do. I'm Linda G.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Let's do this. Penny, why don't you ask your follow-up, and then we'll go to Linda. So go ahead, Penny, with the follow-up, and then we'll on to Linda.
It was just that I'm wondering how helpful spiritually your trips to the Holy Land and then to the religious places in Greece and Turkey, I imagine those were really wonderful boosts to your spiritual life.
Yes, very much. They were, Penny. And we could talk about that privately. Yes, they were.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Penny. Okay, your turn, Linda. Do you have a question for Roz?
Thank you. Did you ever experience fear when you were trying to do your acting things? Because I used to be an actress, and I've wanted to go back to it, but I'm frozen with uncertainty.
Oh, yes, of course. You know that saying, feel the fear and do it anyway? Feel the fear and do it anyway. Don't let fear steal. What does the big book say? Fear ought to be classed with stealing. It messes up alcoholics more than anything else. I may be, paraphrasing the big book right there, but fear is going to steal everything from you. Who cares if you mess up? Who cares? And you know, I'm always worried about, I have body dysmorphia, so it's like, you see like actresses are like size one. Well, how do they stay that way? They don't eat anything. You know, I don't care. I eat my food plan. I'm the size I'm supposed to be, and I get the parts that I'm supposed to get. Or, you know, people really like you because you're friendly and you're open and you're approachable. People don't like snotty bitch. Sorry. They don't like that. They like people who are friendly and approachable. And that's who I want to be. So I just go ahead and say, okay, I'm afraid to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. It didn't kill me. I'm still here to tell about it. And yesterday when I sang that solo and I was totally off key and I sounded terrible, nobody said anything. So I just get to say, oh, well, I messed up. I made a mistake. I'm going to pick up myself and go on today and do the best I can. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thanks so much, Linda. And Roz, thanks again for your time this morning. And just you did a wonderful job, and we're so appreciative of you. So again, if you want Roz's contact information, we'll ask for that at the end of the recorded portion this morning. And so we are, once again, I'm going to give the share ID number for Roz's presentation. That's Roz G in California. The share ID number is 22881. So we're now going to close from a reading from the big book. We read from page 164 in the chapter entitled A Vision for You. So I'll read that now. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick.
The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.